Start the recording.
It's recording.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. This is the August 13, 2024 Thurston County Land Use Hearing Calendar. My name is Sharon Rice, and I'm an attorney who works as a hearing examiner on contract with Thurston County and about 12 other cities and counties up and down the I-5 corridor. As the Thurston County hearing examiner, I have jurisdiction to hear and to decide the application being considered at this hearing. This is project number 2023-103585, and it is a request for innocent purchaser status related to property that is currently addressed as 13443 Tilley Road South in Tenino, unincorporated Thurston County. So, as staff knows, and as we've been referencing already in our discussion before the recording began, I have a series of opening remarks. It's a little bit long. Sorry about that, but it'll just make sure that applicant representatives understand how this hearing will go and how to participate as we go forward. So please, if you need to get my attention, you should call me Examiner Rice or Ms. Rice. Anybody who has requests on how they should specifically be addressed, let us know when it's your turn to testify. The hearing is, of course, being conducted virtually, and thanks everybody for meeting us here on the Zoom platform. Zoom is making a recording, both video and audio, but it's the audio recording that is a required part of the record of this legal proceeding. And because it's necessary that all testimony be perfectly audible on the recording, it's my practice to ask folks to mute their microphones when they're not testifying. That just means that any inadvertent noise in your background won't interrupt anybody else's testimony. Of course, we will remind you to unmute when it's your turn. If you can, also please check cell phones or any other devices in your environment that will make noise and interrupt your testimony. That would be helpful. Of course, despite the virtual format, this is a legal proceeding, and it's the examiner's job to conduct a civil, efficient proceeding. And in light of that, we will, if we have any sort of inadvertent interruptions, I will ask for Ms. Katie's assistance in, in taking care of any audio issues. And if we need to, anybody who gets too unruly can be kicked out. So just keep that in mind. I'm not expecting that to happen here today. Just letting you know that will happen if it's necessary. I will be asking folks to the best of your ability to please try to testify one at a time. Again, that's so that all of your comments are audible on the recording. When it is your turn to testify for the first time, I will ask you please to state and spell your name for the record. Then I'm going to ask you to give me your job title or explain your relationship to this proceeding. And then I will ask you please to take an oath to tell the truth. I will ask you to raise your right hand and to take an oath or affirm an oath. A couple of other things I need to let you know of. In Washington state, the appearance of fairness doctrine applies to land use hearings. That is a state law that requires the decision maker to be free from bias or prejudice. And because that requirement applies today, I will make these disclosures for your information. Again, I'm not a Thurston County employee. I work on contract for Thurston County and about 12 other governments. I don't have any personal, familial, or professional interests anywhere near that subject property, the address I read earlier. And I have not had conversations with anybody from the county, with any applicant representative, or anybody from the public, no neighbors or members of the public, regarding the merits of the proposal. And because all of those things are true, I believe I'm capable of issuing an impartial decision in these proceedings. Anyone who thinks they have grounds to challenge my impartiality is required by the state law to raise that challenge at their first opportunity, which would be during your testimony if you are at this hearing today. One other thing to know, applications for land use permit. Actually, land use permits themselves are not granted based on how popular they are. The number of people who are for or against approval of an application, the number of people is not evidence. So it doesn't matter if a project is very popular or if a project is very unpopular. That's not what's going to decide the ultimate outcome. As the county's examiner, it's my job to review the evidence that is submitted and to determine whether, on balance, it demonstrates compliance with the permit criteria for approval. And as a hearing examiner, if the evidence does demonstrate compliance with the permit criteria, then I don't have authority to deny it. And if the evidence fails to demonstrate compliance, I don't have authority to approve a permit. So please keep that in mind. I'm I'm not looking at the number of people for or against a project. I'm looking to see whether the evidence shows the project complies with criteria for permit approval. In this case, of course, we're looking for innocent purchaser status. So there are criteria in the code that address that status, and I will be looking to see whether the evidence demonstrates compliance with those criteria. And in this application, like all land use applications, the applicant is the party who has the burden of proof. That is a phrase that means the applicant is the party whose job it is to provide evidence that does demonstrate compliance with the permit criteria for approval. I like to state that to make sure everybody has heard it and knows it, but also because we hear from county staff first. And that seems counterintuitive to some folks because they don't have the burden. So I'm going to hear from staff first. And I think that's done in most jurisdictions in Washington State. And I think that's because staff tends to be more familiar with the requirements of the code and also with the hearing process. So in today's hearing, the first testimony we'll hear will be from county staff. After we have heard county staff's testimony and I have had a chance to ask any questions that I have queued up for them, then it will be the applicant's turn. The applicant can offer testimony from as many witnesses as they think as they choose to, and can provide any testimony they think will help me understand that their position, that the evidence demonstrates compliance with criteria for permit approval. I will have a few questions for the applicant. After that, we will go for public comments, and if we have any members of the public who wish to testify, they will be invited to do so. When we get to the public comment period, I will give some more specific instructions for the members of the public. If we do have public comment, both staff and the applicants will have a chance to respond. We'll hear staff's response first, and the applicant will go last responding to public comment, and that's because as the party with the burden, the applicant gets the last say. So at that point, we'll be done with testimony. I will close the record and I will take the evidence under advisement. And by county code, I have 10 business days to issue the decision. Please know though, in a virtual hearing, and I'm conducting virtual hearings everywhere I work, in a virtual hearing, it is my practice to hold the record open for a 2-day period following the close of the hearing to allow for members of the public who were unable to participate because they had technology problems to submit post-hearing written public comment. So it has to be somebody who couldn't participate today because of technology problems, and it has to be submitted within 2 days. If we did receive any post-hearing written public comment from people who had technology problems, then the applicants and the staff would be invited to or requested to respond in writing, and they will also have 2 business days. That means there's going to be a little bit of a schedule following the end of the hearing, that, and we won't know right away on what day the record closes. However, on whichever day the record closes, the decision will be due 10 business days later. So when we're done with the hearing and I've heard all the testimony, I will go over that calendar. I'll give you the exact dates that post-hearing comment is due, that responses are due, and that the decision will be issued. And when we're completely done, I will email that schedule in writing to Miss Katie, and she can forward it to you. So you'll have it in writing from me, and it will also be posted online so that people will know. That is the opening remarks. Aren't you glad you stayed awake for that? I think that's everything you need to know, except that I'd like to acknowledge the exhibits that I was provided, and also to just remind everybody, Miss Katie is the hearing clerk. She is deputized to interrupt whenever I am not noticing something that needs my attention. So please, Miss Katie, do jump in if needed. Before today's hearing, staff sent me, or Miss Katie sent me, a link to staff report. The staff report will be exhibit 1 in the record, and attached to exhibit 1, spelled out in detail on pages 5 and 6 of the staff report, are attachments A through AA. So in other words, A through Z, and then one more, AA. I'm not going to read that list for the record because then we would all fall asleep. But they are spelled out in detail in the staff report. I did review them and they are admitted. So exhibit 1 and its attachments are already in the record. With that, you are done listening to me. Let's have county staff, please, the planner, unmute. Introduce yourself, sir, by stating and spelling your name, and then state your job title and allow me to swear you in.
My name is Craig Chalm. I'm a senior planner with Community Planning and Economic Development for Thurston County. My name, again, Craig Chalm. It's K-R-A-I-G, Chalm, C-H-A-L-E-M.
Thank you so much, sir. If I could ask you, please, to just tell us that you are raising your right hand to take the oath, and we'll take your word for it.
I am raising my right hand.
Thank you so much. Do you swear or affirm that your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. And again, for the record, Mr. Chalam's having camera problems, so he's just going to be an icon and a voice. Please go ahead, Mr. Chalam.
Thank you. We, as you mentioned, are here to hear a innocent purchaser application. The owner is Mr. Vitali Promets. This parcel is located at 13443 Tilley Road South, Tenino, Washington. The project entails two parcel numbers and appears to be one parcel. It was difficult to tell when the other parcel number came to be, but it appears to be derivative of a boundary line adjustment that was recorded in 1982 and incorporated a portion of it, the lot 126101109 00, which has an existing house on it and abuts Tilley Road itself. Now, looking over the property history, it appears that the two parcel numbers were created to basically describe the two, the parcel that was existing and then the portion that was incorporated by the boundary line adjustment. And those two parcel numbers have traveled together ever since. Now, the standards for determining a boundary line, or I apologize, the standards for determining a legal lot are in Chapter 1804-045. And there was not a deed created as part of that could have been written and created and recorded. All we have are sales agreements, and so we are embarking on the innocent purchaser criteria, which are in 1848-030. Now, which really gets into it under B of said section. And a lot created in a legal manner and subsequently acquired by an innocent purchaser, as so determined by Thurston County Hearing Examiner after notice of public hearing. And this property has been noticed. A notification has been out and the property has been posted at least 10 days prior to this hearing. And this may be deemed legal wherein such purchaser files a notarized affidavit with Thurston County Department attesting to the following. And then the applicant has made a claim of innocent purchaser outlined in the applicant's affidavit. And that was an attachment E, which has been provided to the examiner. Number one, the lot was purchased at market value, not reflecting the legal division. Now, the lot was purchased in 2022 for $500,000, which does appear above the market rate, which was determined and assessed, I should say, by Thurston County at $332,000. It has only reached the sum of a little more than $500,000 in 2024. Number two, the purchaser exercised reasonable diligence, but did not know the illegal, did not know of the illegal division. Statements provided by the applicant note that he was unaware that the parcel was not created in a legal fashion, and that is in attachment C. However, the applicant has not provided any information as to why he believed that he was buying two separate lots other than there were two separate parcel numbers. And then third, the purchaser has not previously been granted an innocent purchaser status by Thurston County. And a search of the records proves that to be true, that neither the property nor the purchaser has been granted an innocent purchaser status in the past. I am available for additional questions. It appears that the applicant is also here and available to provide a testimony. So I will leave it at that if you'd like to, but I am available for any clarification as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Chalam. So I did want to ask a few questions.
Yes.
So you noted I had a hard time following a statement in the staff report, but I think your testimony just clarified the portion, the smaller piece that is ending in lot number 200. You think that was the portion that was created by the boundary line adjustments and added to the portion that is ending in parcel number ending in 900. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that occurred, that combination occurred in 1982. That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Great. Your staff report cites attachment T for that. I went through attachment T and I tried really hard to find any references to those parcel numbers or anything. And I couldn't find any very useful information in attachment T that conveyed that to me. But now I'm clear on your testimony. Is there anything in attachment T expressly you would draw my attention to that was the basis of your understanding?
Yes, actually, if you look at the map that was provided in attachment T, the BLA 0034, and it says boundary line adjustment map, and I believe that would have been the pages. Let's see. I guess this would be page 183 at the bottom of the Lance Fish.
It's also page 9 of the PDF at attachment T. For the record.
Okay. If you look at that, do you see where there is a line that goes across what appears to be parcel C, and it says it is 200.93 feet.
Yes.
And it appears to be following the line from an adjacent lot to the north, which is not a party to the BLA.
Got it.
So it appears that this whole entire parcel was then considered parcel C.
Got it.
But that line was dragged right across it, and I believe was then described out.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't make that out from what you had written, but now that you showed me what you're talking about, I can see it on the map. That line, it does fall approximately in the same location as the parcel, tax parcel boundary.
Yeah, so it was kind of hard to describe in writing, but I was trying to work it out in my head.
Got it. Got it. I got it now. Thank you. So one thing that you stated, and I think also in the staff report, you identified purchase at market value. And as a reference point, you offered assessed value. So in other words, the purchase price was higher than the assessed value.
Yes.
Is that, I understood you correctly?
Yes.
Okay. In my experience, the assessed value is always lower than the market, or is frequently lower than the market value. So is assessed value the, do we have any evidence of the market value of the property at the time of purchase?
No, there was. I did not see in any of the materials an appraisal for the property. And so I went by what was available, and I would agree that I believe the assessed price is historically around 30% less, but this was quite a bit more, as if it would give the impression that they were paying for the lot and then some.
Got it. Yeah. And I don't have any recent cases or any personal reason to have any knowledge about property values in rural Thurston County in 2022. So we'll be asking these questions of the applicant. So they'll be able to speak to those questions as well. Just to be clear, and just to make sure I'm understanding the status of the case, there are two tax parcels here, but the county, does the county view them combined as one lot?
Yes. Well, we see them as being just one lot, which would be parcel C from the boundary line adjustment, which has traveled with both parcel numbers. So they weren't. They were combined and made one lot by the BLA.
Great. And then could you provide some testimony providing your understanding or your department's position on the difference between tax parcels and legal lots, just to have some more context for the discussion?
Yes, we have criteria, as I mentioned, are outlined in Chapter 18.04.045, which are what we use to determine a legal lot of record. Throughout Thurston County's history, it has accepted certain forms of land division. I believe that these were developed in order to prevent misdealings or illegal land trades by formalizing the process of segregating property for separate legal ownership by either a deed or survey or plat. There have been several different manners. They have also, there's also a history of properties being separated by testamentary deed, which I also did not find, or by an operation of the courts by means of, say, a court ruling or, say, a divorce ruling. None of these were found. However, that's how you create a legal lot. The actual process of creating a parcel, what we call a tax parcel number, is a means of accounting. It is intended to determine the tax liability for a portion of property, and then that may be shared by parties, but is more often than not just considered one number for a piece of property that someone may pay.
Thank you for that. And is it your experience that legal lots commonly or can commonly include more than one tax parcel?
They can. And when this occurs, then we require a legal lot segregation to segregate these so that they may, because we have to demonstrate that they were initially both parcels legal lots of record, and then they can get a tax segregation so they can get an additional parcel number for the other piece of property. So yes, there was a period, I believe, when there were many, many parcels and people owned a series of parcels that were contiguous to each other. And in order to simplify the paperwork, they were receiving one tax statement from the Thurston County assessor's office, and then, or the treasurer. But if they wanted to separate those off for a legal sale, they had to go through a process known as a legal lot segregation.
Okay. Last question, Mr. Challen, does your department have a recommendation or are on the application?
We do not, we're not in the custom of making recommendations. We leave that to the hearing examiner's decision based on the information that we provide. The applicant has met the requirements of our application, and which is why we are, staff has moved forward to hearing.
Okay, thank you for that. Anything else, Mr. Challen?
No, Examiner Rice. Thank you.
You very much. We do have a representative of Public Works here. Sir, did you have testimony you'd like to make, or are you just here in case of questions?
I have nothing to add. I'm just here in case there's questions.
Thanks for being here for that. Mm-hmm. We will move then to the applicant's case. Who will speak first for the applicant? Please unmute, state and spell your name, and then explain your relationship to the proceeding, and let me swear you in.
Thank you. My name is Richard R. Larson. RICHARDRLARSON. I'm a professional land surveyor by trade, and I am representing the client, Mr. Cromit.
Great. Applicant representative and professional land surveyor.
Yes.
Let me swear you in, please, sir. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you very much, Mr. Larson. Please go ahead.
Okay, well, first I'd like to let you know that I've been an owner of a land surveying engineering development company for over 40 years in the Pierce County area. I live in Olympia. I used to work for Thurston County Engineering for 12 years when I got started. So I've got a little bit of experience. And I retired from my company. And when I retired, I was then hired by the state. So I was deputy director for the Board of Registration for engineers, land surveyors, and septic tank designers. Again, I was deputy director, and I was there for 3 years, helping them set up a new division for their agency. And they hired me because I was old and I had a lot of experience. So I'm going to proceed ahead with the hearing. I'd like to say that I'd like to thank the staff. They put together a really, what I would consider an immaculate report. Thank you very much, because I think it has everything in it. I think it speaks to a lot of the things that we want to talk about. So first, I'd like to let you know that I was hired by Mr. Kromitz after he had gone along with, his building permit submittal. And he hired me to come out and do an easement for ingress, egress, and utilities, and do a 100-foot radius legal description for a non-polluting area around a new well that he was proposing on his building site. So I came out, I met Mr. Kromitz, we went over his land. I did the necessary measurements I needed to do and to prepare the legal description. And I went back to my office and, the next day started doing my research on the project so I could write the legal description. Went through title report and the site plan and everything that he had provided me. I looked at the county assessor map. And I, unfortunately for him, I came up with a problem. And I said to him that I do not think you have two building sites. I did the research and I kept coming back to what the planner had described and what you have in the exhibit and the boundary line revision as Exhibit C. And that shows one parcel. Unfortunately, on the county assessor map, the thing that most citizens look at when they do their research, it shows two parcels and it does not show a heavy line around it. So when you pull them up on your web page, if you pull up his address where the house is, it shows his parcel. If you pull up the address on the second parcel where he wants to do building site, it shows another parcel. And I'd like to say in my experience, and when I was working for the board, I did research and investigations all around the state. And typically when you have a situation like this, where you have a county parcel or property that has two parcel numbers, very seldom, if at all, do you see the second parcel that's not a legal building site with an address. And they usually put a note on the parcel saying that it goes with the parent parcel. And on this, I saw none of that. It did have an address, and there was nothing saying that it belonged to any other parcel when you pull up the county information. And in doing my research, and when Mr. Kromitz was doing his research, the neighboring parcel to the south. And I believe one of the neighbors, that particular neighbor, did write a letter stating that they purchased the property, you know, and their lot was done legally. Well, I can tell you in my research, that lot was created illegally. There's no way there's ever been a short plat done on it. There's no way anything's been done on it. I have a clue on how maybe they got a building permit on it, but it's in the same exact position that Mr. Cromit's property is in. And so when Mr. Cromit's was looking at this, he thought, well, the neighbor's got exactly the same thing I do. I should be able to get a building permit on mine. And I'd like to say that Mr. Cromit's is a, he's a, now a contractor. He does remodeling in homes, but he's your average everyday citizen that, that believes in the system. He's not used to working in a system like I am, or, you know, the people that work for the county. And he, relies on what he sees and what he's told. Again, he's migrated here from, he's a Ukraine, he's a citizen now, and he's in business. So to start off, the criteria for that we need to prove about, you know, hopefully winning our case, there are three criteria. And, you know, that I pulled up the innocent purchasers agreement for Pierce or Thurston County. And the number one is the lot was purchased at market value, not reflecting the illegal division. Well, Mr. Cromit's, as you've talked about, when you look at the paperwork, he made a lower offer on the property, and he was told by the seller, or the real estate agent and the owners of the property at the time, that they were two separate tax parcels and they were two separate building permits. Okay, and when he purchased the property, he intended to remodel the house and live in the house. And while doing so, he was going to build a dream home on the other lot. And so he paid more money for the other lot. And I believe, examiner, you asked that question. He did pay more money than what it was valued at. And it was quite a bit more than if you added a little bit more, because the county is usually low on their tax assessments. He was in good intent, thinking he was buying another legal building site. So I'm going to right now ask Mr. Cromit's to step in and tell you what he did prior to purchasing this property.
Great. Let's have you introduce yourself for the record, sir.
Hi, my name is Vitaly Cromit's. My first name, V-I-T-A-L-I-Y. And last name, Khromets.
Great. May I swear you in, please? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you give today will be true? If so, please say, I do.
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Cromit's. Go ahead.
So when we saw this property on the market, the first thing we did, we came and take a look at the property. And it was me and my wife, my realtor who was with me, and we walked the property. We saw the property. Realtor mentioned it's a two parcel numbers, and looks like it's going to be good for your future to build your dream home over here. So on my end, before we make an offer, I went on the county website, and I checked the geodata site to make sure it is legal lot, which it was showing. On top of that, I went to the county planning department, and I asked the planner, who was, I think it was assistant planner, I don't know, who was sitting at the front desk, and I asked him if this is the legal lot, and in the future, can I build over there? And what they did, they checked everything, and they told me, it looks okay according to our data over here. We don't see any restrictions. So I took all the information, and then I went back to my realtor, and I told them, hey, let's put some offer because it's a good deal. And that's what we did. We put an offer. They came back. They told us, we're not going to accept this offer. We want more money because of the extra lot that you buying with this house. And we gave them a little bit bigger offer. We move in, we remodeled the house, and last summer I decided to start moving forward with all the process of building, which I never deal with the like division, subdivisions, or building permitting, like permitting full house. So I did not know where to start. So what I did, I went again to the county, I went back to the planner, I sit down with the planner, and I asked the planner, I bought the house, here's the address. I do have a separate parcels in the back, which they open up, they double check. They told me, yeah, you do. It looks good to our record over here. We don't see any issues. And I asked them, what's my next step to start the building process? And they told me, the first thing, you have to apply for the septic design because it usually takes longer than the building permit. And then you have to get land surveyor, hire land surveyor so they can put an easement for your driveway to go back to your property. And then you have to contact the PSC with how to bring the power back to the lot and all that kind of information. So basically, taking all the information from the county, I took the applications and everything, and that's when I kind of started building, because they double checked second time, and they told me there's no issues, you can move forward, wouldn't see any issue. The only, like they told me, the only thing you need is to hire the land surveyor, because there's no accessible roads to that property, so you have to do the easement for the driveway on your existing lot. And I hired the septic designer. He did the septic design. He submitted the application for the septic, and then I hired Mr. Larson to do my land surveying for my easement, and that's when he discovered the problem. And we went to the assessor office with Mr. Larson. We went to the building department. We went to the we went to all these departments to get more answers, like what is going on, why before they told us it's a buildable lot, and now he discovered these issues and nobody can give us the answer. And in one of the emails, I emailed to the Don, he's assistant planner, because we talked to him before, and then I talked to him like four or five times, and one of the emails I send it to him, telling him, hey, tell me if there's an issue with this lot, what do I should do? Because I put in so much money, and I don't have any answers from nobody. Nobody giving me any answers. And I think it was like a month later, he replied back to me saying that, yeah, it looks like it's after Mr. Larson discovered, and we already told this to the assessor office, to the planners. He replied back to me saying, yeah, it looks like it looks like two parcels with the one legal lot. At this moment, you can apply for the innocent purchaser or wait for septic people to do bigger review on your application and see if they can find anything else. So what I did, I just kind of left it and see if septic people will get back to me with some information. I think at the beginning this year, I never heard nothing from the septic people. I finally went back to the county asking, hey, what's the status of my application? It's been over 6 months. I never heard nothing. And the county was like, Oh, we lost your information. We could not, in your application, there was no cell phone number, there was no email, there was nothing. When I look at this package, there's all my information on the application. And so basically I end up starting all over, and I start basically try to contact everybody, get all this information, how to apply for the innocent purchaser. And then basically I just went and I applied for innocent purchaser. And I have a Igor. He's a realtor who helped me buy the property. If you have questions for him, he's here to answer.
Okay,
some.
Let's go ahead and hear his testimony, sir. If you would introduce yourself, could you please state and spell your name, and then allow me to swear you in.
Yeah, hi, I'm Igor Meister with John L. Scott. First name Igor Meister, Meister.
Great. And if I could swear you in, please. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Mr. Meister, were you the realtor representing Mr. Kromitz in his purchase?
Correct. Yeah, I was representing his family when he was purchasing this property.
And could you just please help me understand what was understood about the property at the time of the transaction?
Yes. So we came and walked the property with Kromet's family, and they really loved the property. They loved the idea that they can build a second home and a second partial. I talked to the agent that was representing the sellers, which was, I believe it was a state sale. And they even put it on their listing that it's two partials, two buildable partials. So they were, Mr. Kromet's and his family was assuming that they were buying two partials where they can build additional home in the future, like he mentioned, their forever home. Mr. Kromitz, he went to the county to verify the partial that he can actually build on it, you know, because I was like, hey, before we even submit an offer, can you please do your research to see if you can actually, you know, it's 100% guaranteed. He came in, they said, yes, it has two different addresses, it's two different partials, you're going to be able to build, there's no issues. Even the neighbor on the left of him that has the same property, when we were walking the property, told him the same thing. You know, he's like, I had exactly the same property. It's two partials. You know, you can always build something in the back. So, and that's what Vitaly was buying originally. And that's what it was told to him. And, you know, there was never, you know, somebody that told him, hey, you're not going to be able to build there, or it's not a legal partial. It was never disclosed that to him.
Right. So the listing from the sellers indicated that it was two buildable parcels.
Yeah, it was listed as two partials. Correct.
Do you have anything that shows that?
I believe it's, if you pull it up on the remarks, it shows that it shows two partials ID and everything on them. Yeah.
And can you tell me what document I should be able to see that in?
It's on the listing originally. Even if I believe if you pull up a Zillow link, you'll be able to show they're gonna, it says, you know, that it has two partials on it.
Okay.
And I do this, you know, I sell land to builders in Pierce County and stuff like that. And a lot of the times when there is two addresses, two partials, you know, my clients go and they talk to the city and they're like, yes, it's a buildable lot. There has never been an issue. You know, this is the first time. And I sold in the last 8 years over 400 homes, you know, so it's not a common thing that, you know, you run into.
All right. So I just need a couple of items of clarification, and I don't know, it might be Mr. Kromitz, or I don't know who will answer this for me, but could I please have it clarified what the two different addresses are?
So it's 13447, that's for the back parcel, and 13443, that's for the existing house that I'm living.
Okay, thank you for that.
And I received tax, property tax, what they call that, card from the county for that for that parcel number and with the address.
Okay. Does anybody here for the applicant have anything that they have that they can submit in writing that shows that the seller listed it as two buildable lots, not from Zillow, but anything from the seller?
Let me see.
If you had something in writing, that would be evidence that you would want to add to the record.
The evidence, because I asked for their statement, and she wrote this and she notarized this paper. It's in the package.
Yes, I've seen that.
She didn't put it. It's a two buildable lot.
That's right.
Because I'm assuming she was covering her.
Yeah. Yes. I did notice that her statement doesn't say two buildable lots. It says two tax parcels.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at the listing itself,
I don't have access to the listing. I don't believe that's in the record. Okay. Do you have access to the listing?
I do. Yeah. And I'm looking.
And are you looking at it right now?
Correct. Yes.
And is that something you can print out?
I can. Yeah.
Could you please? I feel like Mr. Krometz wants to add that to the record.
Okay, I'll be able to send that to him because it says right here, Barnwood, okay, and it says covered RV parking plus additional 1.15 acre separate tax parcel included.
Okay. I feel like Mr. Krometz wants to add whatever the listing information was to the record. I have deed history, but I don't have the seller's identification of what's for sale, and I feel like that would be relevant. Mr. Krometz, would you like to add that to the record?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, let's do that. Ms. Katie, I think let's just make it Exhibit 2.
Okay.
So, Mr. Maester, if you could just email that to Mr. Krometz, and then you can forward it to Ms. Katie. She will give it to me, and it will be part of the record.
Okay, yeah.
That would be great. Thank you for that. Mr. Krometz, can I ask you a couple other questions?
Yes.
You said you went to the county, and you spoke to the planner at the counter or at the front desk. Could you provide more information about what building you're in, who you were speaking to, so just so we can confirm who you were speaking with?
It was a girl. It was in the building, the one behind you.
That photograph. Okay, great. That building. Good. That's useful.
Yeah. She was a new girl. Well, not new. She was a young girl. I don't remember her name because it seemed like almost 2 years ago.
Were you perhaps at that permit counter?
No, I took the ticket for the planner, and they sent me to the inside to talk to the planners, and they only opened, I think, from 11 to 2 or whatever the hours was. And the first time I came in, they told me I'm not able to talk to them because it's after hours to the open. And then I came back the second day during that time window, and I was able to talk into the planner. Or assistant planner,
Let me just make a few notes about that. Okay. And then later you said you spoke with somebody named Don, a planner named Don?
Yes. So Don Zane, I think I have an email from him over here as well. So I went the second time after we purchased the house. So it was like a year ago before I submit everything. And I believe I was talking to him when I sit down, and he gave me his card. I do have his card, business card. And that's when we review everything again. And then I ask him if there's no issue. And that's when I asked him, like, what's the steps can I take to build it? And he explained it to me. And then I talked to him again after I hired Mr. Larson, and he discovered this issue. And when I went back to him, I met him with him again. And I told him, I hired this land surveyor, and he discovered this issue that there's some issue with my parcel. And he was like, after that, he told me, well, I can't answer you this question because I don't have full access to all the documents, but you can leave your email and I can reply you back. Which 2 weeks passed by, I sent him email, he never replied me back. Like, I waited for 2 weeks, no answers. Then I send the email and then he replied me back to my email. That was already done after me and Mr. Larson went again to the planners and we went to the assessor office. We start kind of going from one department to another department and asking these questions. And then I was able to get his email from him saying that, yeah, it looks like he went over the paperwork and it looks like one legal lot. And so at the first time he told me it's everything looks good. And then at the second time, down the road, he apparently he did probably some more research or something, and he was discovered that it was actually one legal lot. But okay, I already submit everything, and I was waiting for my septic approval, and I was waiting for why the first two times they told me it's a good buildable lot, and then when he discovered the problem and we start asking these questions from different departments, they told me, oh, actually, yeah, there is an issue with your lot. They should have told me this at the beginning.
Understood. And it was Mr. Larson who discovered the
yes,
problem.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Mr. Kremetz, I just, because one of the criteria for approval for innocent purchaser wants to be made clear that the property was purchased at value, I need information about how much your first offer was, and then whatever other information you can provide about the value of properties or property in the area at the time of your purchase.
So the value of the property in this area, probably Igor be able to give you, but like when they listed this, they listed for 585 this house, and because of the two parcels. And then when we came and we looked the house, I was like, there's no way they can get this much money because it's full trash. And I told, we'll look inside, we'll look outside, we walk the property, and I told Igor, listen, I remodeled the houses for a living, and this will take a lot of money to rehab this house. Even they have a second parcel, and it's even if it's a good lot, it's going to take a lot of time and money. So we offered them $485, which they denied and came back with a counter offer, and I believe it was $540. And I told them my last price will be $500, take it or leave it. And they actually came back and they accepted $500,000.
Got it.
So if I can add to that, so I'm looking at
Please.
The purchase and sale agreement. So yeah, original offer was $485 and then they counter back at $545. And then it took them some time. The property wouldn't sell. So they came back and we wrote a counter offer because they called me. They're like, hey, you know, is your client still interested? And I'm like, well, not at that price. So we came back at $500 and that's when they agreed to sell it to him for $500.
Great. And can you tell me how long that period of time was that they turned down his 485, they counted it for 545, and then how long was it that the property didn't sell? Do you know?
So they had on the market originally, let me see. Originally the property was on the market for about 20 days, and that's when the interest really start going up. So, and like Vitaly mentioned, the property needed a lot of work. You know, it was distressed property, it was estate sale. They didn't want to do anything. They just wanted to sell it the way it was. So they counter back Vitaly on July 27th, and he agreed not to accept their offer. And then Vitaly countered them at the same day back, and then they end up accepting his offer. So
okay,
it was like 2 days apart, you know?
Okay.
Well, originally the property stayed on the market. It was a state sale, so it was a representative, you know,
Yes.
Well, the estate working on getting this sold for them, but like you mentioned before, the property needed a lot of work to it to be done. You know, it was, you know, the kitchen, all of it needed to be redone. Everything was old, and you know, people probably smoked in it for 20, 30 years. It had really bad smell in it. It was in really rough shape.
I am familiar with those kinds of conditions. Okay. Thank you for all of that information, and that plus that listing information you're going to add to the record, Mr. Maester. That will be helpful.
Yep, I already emailed it to Vitaly, so Vitaly has it. He'll add it, and that way you guys can see it as well.
Those were all the questions I had. Was there anything else you, Mr. Larson, or you, Mr. Kremetz, wanted to add to the record?
I'd like to go over a couple of things. Just kind of like the time frames. So I think Mr. Kremetz started his application in June. Is that correct?
Building permit or septic permit?
Yeah, he went in.
Septic.
And met with the planner, as he said, and hired the septic company in June of 23. Okay. And later, after that was done, then he, of course, he's going down the list of what he was told to do, and he hired me. And I came out and obviously found the problem. We went down to the county together, and we met with the planner at the main planning desk. I believe it was Don.
Probably, because I met with him like four or five times. Yeah, I met with him a lot.
So we met with Don, and I went over what I found, and he said, well, gee, it looks like it's two parcels, and he sent us over to the assessor's office. Okay, so, I mean, I've been doing this for many years, and this is not an uncommon thing. You would think, when all the departments are under one roof, you would get, they'd all talk to each other. But anyway, off we go across the hallway to the assessor's office. We met with the person at the counter, and he said, and I laid our case out saying, look, I found some discrepancies here. It looks like he's got one parcel, but it's showing up as two separate addresses. It's going through the, he's made his applications. And so we talked to the person at the counter, and he said, well, that's over my head. And he went back into the back room and talked to a Kelly Dynique. And so she was busy and couldn't come out and talk to us, and she's a senior property control analyst for the assessor's office. So went back to my office, and I emailed her, and I said, Kelly, you know, I introduced myself, and 2 weeks ago we called the assessor's office and spoke to Buddy, and this is all in emails. And he said he spoke to you and was told that these parcels were created due to the fact they are in two separate tax districts. Okay. And in Thurston County, this automatically creates two legal building parcels. We have that in an email.
If you'd like to add that to the record, you're welcome to.
Yes. And so I asked, I said, I have checked with Chicago Title Company. This is an email from me to Kelly, the Thurston County Planning Department, and I can find no other reason other than your explanation of how these parcels were created. I mean, and I do this for a living. You know, I create parcels for people. Please verify by email that the above facts are true. And then I get an email back from her later that day and says, you know, good morning. There was a slight miscommunication between the information I gave and how it was relayed to you. The separate tax districts would require our office to split, if you will, a parcel and give it two different parcel numbers, one for the benefit of each tax district. This does not create two separate legal building slash parcel lots. So now we're getting confusion.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing here is, you know, Mr. Kromitz is trying to do the right thing. He's going to the right departments. He's getting feedback from the county. The parcel next door, I don't know if you want to go into any more of the information, but when you look at the map, I think we looked at, I'm not sure what exhibits or if they were marked as exhibits. I'm not sure which page it was, but it was the mapping that showed Mr. Kromitz's parcel as parcel C, and that was only yes. one parcel.
That's in the boundary line adjustment.
Yes, the boundary line adjustment map. Okay, well, when you look at the map that was done as a non-platted street 2 months prior to this, there was a submittal called a non-platted street, NPS 0046, and that's in the packet.
The first one on the under the S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first one under the S in the packet. And it shows all the parcels in there. It shows Mr. And it shows that parcel number 6 in this non-platted street, it shows it, and it shows, you know, the Kromitz parcel, the parcel next to it, and another parcel. And in 2 months, you see Mr. Kromitz's parcel in as one piece, that's C. And if you look below, there's a parcel that was purchased, I believe, at the same time. They're not part of this boundary line adjustment.
Right.
Correct? And when you look at the new parcel maps, they were never combined. They bought, if you extend the lines down anyway, they should, that parcel that was created and added and given a separate parcel number down below to the south of the over our parcel C, that should not have been included as one parcel. That should have still been an attachment to parcel A. And I could find nothing in the record where that was ever applied for or segregated properly. Okay, okay, so that's why Mr. Kromitz said, well, hey, next door, and of course the people said in their response, I believe one of the property owner for that property said they did their due diligence and they bought it, and it looked like they may have had a little bit of trouble, because now if the land is segregated, as it's shown on this map as A, B, and C, that small parcel that's on the lot south of parcel C, which I'm saying should have still been part of parcel A, is shown as a separate parcel on the assessor maps. And there's a boundary survey that was done showing that as two separate parcels, and that's incorrect. So this actually, I'm saying that this map we're looking at, the boundary line adjustment map, is incorrect.
Got it.
And so naturally, when Mr. Kromitz is looking over there, there's a house built on it, a separate parcel. his parcel is bigger even than the one to the south. You know, he's got the septic stuff going on. He's gone through all the things that he thought he needed to do, and then he hired me. I believe if he wouldn't have hired me to go through this, he probably would have gotten a building permit and everything, and probably had a problem when he went to sell it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the backstory and for walking me through the comparison of those two maps. That's useful information. If you do want to offer that email in the record, please send it to Miss Katie and we'll make it Exhibit 3. That'll be useful. All right. Let's Miss Katie, there's a member of the public, at least one person in the meeting. Let's find out if we're going to have public comment today.
Okay. We have one attendee, Dave Frank. If you'd like to speak, there's a raise your hand button at the bottom of your screen and we can unmute you. Or would you like me just to allow them to speak and see?
Let's do see if Dave Frank raises their hand. If you'd like to testify, we'd like to hear your testimony. Please do find and use the raise hand button. It's on mine. It's at the bottom of the screen. And
okay, and I saw the hand go up really quickly.
So you're going to promote them?
Yeah. And Dave, you'll get a prompt on your screen asking you to rejoin the meeting as a panelist, and you'll want to confirm.
There we go. Hi there. We'll need you to unmute your audio so that we can hear you, please.
There should be a little microphone button on the bottom of your screen that either says mute or audio, if you want to click that.
Yep, my audio button's right next to my microphone button. I'm next to my camera button, so we can't hear you if you're trying to speak to us until you unmute.
And I have an option to ask to unmute. So you might be getting a prompt.
Thank you.
If you want to go ahead and click unmute.
All right, Dave Frank, we are still unable to hear you. So we're not sure why that is. We're going to take one more beat here and wait one more second to see if you can get your audio unmuted. If not, if there was some kind of technology problem, then you would be allowed to submit post-hearing written comment, Dave Frank, if there was a technology issue. But it doesn't look like we're going to get testimony. So let's go ahead. I'm going to close public comment. Sorry that if you were trying, if that didn't work out. And let me just go back to the county for any final comments. Mr. Chalam, any other testimony to make in response to the testimony you've heard today?
Only that understand the applicant's frustration in relation to collecting information while they were at the county offices. However, the county does not make any official determination without having first obtained an application. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. And just because you're here still, Mr. Saint, anything to add to the record?
No.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Kremetz, Mr. Larson, Mr. Meister, anything else for the record before we adjourn? Okay, you're just unmute real quick and let us know for the record.
No, I already sent the paper from the Igor, and then right. I'm going to take a copy of this and then
that's I'll right.
send to Ms. Cindy, whatever her name.
Sonia Katie.
Sonia Katie.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that. If when I get those will be added to the record. And if there's no other testimony, then let's go ahead and close the record today. Again, if Dave Frank was trying to testify and had technology problems, Dave Frank would be eligible to submit post-hearing written comment. If we get any, Ms. Katie will forward it to you, Mr. Kremetz, and you'll have a chance to respond in writing. Mr. Challen will also be asked to respond in writing for the record. You'll have 2 business days. So let's go over that calendar now. Again, today is August 13th, so the record is held open for 2 days for post-hearing public comment from people who had technology problems, potentially including Dave Frank. If we don't get post-hearing comment by the 15th, the record will close on the 15th, and that makes the decision due August 29th. If we do get post-hearing comment from Dave Frank or anybody else who had technology problems, Mr. Challen or Ms. Katie, whoever receives it, please forward it immediately to the other, and then also please make sure it is sent to Mr. Kremetz as soon as possible. And then Mr. Challen, Mr. Kremetz, you'll have 2 business days to respond. That means your responses are due by August the 19th, and that makes the 10 business day decision deadline September 3rd, because Labor Day is a legal holiday. I don't even have to ask about that one. I'm pretty confident that's a legal holiday in the county. All right, I'm going to send this schedule in writing to Ms. Katie. Ms. Katie will forward me those 2 documents, and then the document exhibits 1 with the attachments 2 and 3 admitted today will be the record unless we get post-hearing comment. If we do, post-hearing comment and your responses will also be made exhibits. They'll all be spelled out in detail in the decision document. When I issue that decision, I send it electronically to Ms. Katie usually on the day it's due, sometimes a little earlier. As soon as she receives it, she will format it, put it on county letterhead, and it will be sent to you. Ms. Katie, do you automatically issue them by email and then also send them by writing?
Yes, I do. If I have a mailing address, I'll mail it, but it's typically email that I have.
Great. All right, so you'll receive that as soon as she is able to get that out after getting it from me. That completes our hearing. Thanks very much, everybody, for being here today and for your testimony and evidence.
Thank you.
Everybody, take care.
Thank you.